Enter the world of the paranormal.
UFOs.
Alien abductions.
Ghosts.
Out-of-body experiences.
Past lives.
Distant viewing.
Government cover-ups.
Welcome to Sightings on the Radio with your host, Jeff Lentz. You can reach Jeff live at 1-800-745-6655. Here's Jeff.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Hour number two, and joining me now tonight for the next 2 hours, a gentleman who hasn't been on this program for some time. Very happy to have him back. His name is Richard Sauter. He has a PhD. He has put together more data on underground cities, tunnels, bases, and hidden installations, and installations that aren't hidden than anyone else in America, without doubt. This is a subject that has been intriguing for many years for a variety of reasons, especially now in light of the world geopolitical scene when it appears that we may be certainly on the doorstep of a major exchange of weaponry, which could drive a lot of people underground. And those people would be going underground, certainly would be called wealthy by many and other names by others that we won't repeat here. Richard, can you hear me all right?
Just fine, Jeff.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
Good. Really well, thanks. We just did an hour with our colleagues over in England, and they have reports of much activity there underneath Rudlow Manor and the area around it, Wiltshire, of underground base that may go down as much as a mile, tunnels, maybe railways, certainly roads, vehicular traffic, the works. So England has much the same legend and mythos as America does. Have you talked to people over there that can substantiate any of this?
Yeah, I was over in England this past year, this past September, and spoke with a couple of people who were telling me about underground installations in England. There are a number of them, it appears, including one major underground facility in Scotland. And there is evidently a train that goes from the south of England up to London underground, a kind of a subway evidently that may date back to the World War II era and may still be in use. Certainly that is within well within technological capabilities, and it appears the English government has the same kind of black projects, though perhaps on a smaller scale than we have here in the United States. So I'm not surprised at all to hear that.
It's another issue in legend that at one time the earth became too hot and people had to go into caves to survive. We have always had throughout our history the idea of going underground, either in fairy tale or in practicality, in terms of survival. It's an interesting concept. Have you ever looked at that psychologically to see what really gives us the impetus to go under?
Well, I'll tell you, I have thought about that. There is a psychological dynamic involved here, and I have raised it a couple of times in my talks that I occasionally give to groups. I haven't often mentioned it on the radio. But there's a very pronounced depth psychology theme here, and the pun is intentional.
Uh-huh.
I think we're dealing with a very deeply rooted and suppressed psychological dynamic that has clear sexual overtones. If you look at my book, for example, Underground Bases and Tunnels, and you look in the middle section, I have 50 pages of diagrams, illustrations, photos, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And the tunnel boring machines themselves are quite phallic, actually, in their shape and their structure. They're long and cylindrical, and they gouge out tunnels through the earth. Some mm-hmm. of these installations themselves have are reminiscent of a womb-like shape.
Mm-hmm.
And my feeling is that what we're doing as a society, as individuals and as a society, we have repressed a lot of natural energies in very unnatural ways. The sexual energy is included. I think there are very few people in our society that are well integrated and healthfully integrated in a psychological, emotional, and spiritual sense sexually, notwithstanding that we talk about it all the time. And I think this is reflected technologically and in our black operations projects. It comes out in the technology. People project it. In psychology, even in pop psychology, you often talk about psychological projections, about manifesting in the outer world and in your life things that you're reflecting from your inside, from your psychological depths. And I think we're seeing this to a certain extent in this underground base activity, in the tunnel boring. And I think that what it represents is a desire to get back to our very basic biological origins. There's a real, there's a survival impulse at work here. There's a propagation impulse at work. There's also an erotic impulse, trying to almost, if you will, do it with the Mother Earth, if I can say that. But
yeah,
not
no,
being,
it makes, yeah.
But not being natural, not being balanced personalities, it turns out to be done in a very perverted, harsh, violent, technological way that is unnatural. And I think there's a lot of that involved in this.
Very interesting analysis. All we have to do, for those who may be laughing at this, is look back at, Victorian England, for an example. So sexually repressed that the furniture began looking like women's legs. Table legs were carved in the shape of women's legs. It's true, and it's a factor that has never been talked about. I'm glad you had something to contribute to that very strange question.
Well, and I don't think it's something to laugh at. I think it's something to ponder, and I think it's something that ought to cause us to look within ourselves. I don't think it's accidental that this. You spoke at the outset of the program about the possibility of a shooting war. Perhaps you alluded to the use of dangerous weaponry like nuclear missiles. You didn't use the word, but I'm sure that's in the back of a lot of people's minds. And we've had Boris Yeltsin making dire warnings for the past week about the United States. Potentially starting a world war by initiating military action against Iraq, and that's always a concern. Russia is a nuclear power. It's a very unstable power in recent years, and all of that has to be kept in mind, and Russia is also an ally of Iraq.
Well, interestingly enough, those remarks, Richard, as you know, are not exactly front page on the New York Times either. They're rather buried, as there are the remarks made by the Chinese.
Yes. Well, I'm getting back around to the sexuality dynamic here, and that if you look at nuclear missiles, they're nothing but very deadly stylized phalluses. It's this very violent type of sexuality, a murderous type of sexuality, is reflected in military technology. By the way, most of it designed by men, almost all of it.
Goes all the way back to the obelisk. I mean, these are almost space-age powered destructive obelisks.
There's a magical dynamic involved here as well. Not in a sense necessarily of supernatural or paranormal, but the implication that you're going to create a technology that you're going to use to structure reality in the way that you want it to be, however violent that reality may be. And in a very essential sense, that's what magic is, going through rituals and devising technologies that enable you to structure reality, to mold it to be as you want it to be.
How far back in this country have we been actively building secret underground locations to shield and protect the rich or the elect?
Goes back decades, Jeff. It started right after World War II. There are a number of reasons for that. One, the United States, having developed atomic technology, knew how explosively powerful it was, and determined that probably it was only a matter of time until other nations developed atomic bombs as well, and that has proven to be the case. And so the decision was made to go underground. On the other hand, at the close of World War II, when the Allies went into Germany, the United States and the other Allies found that the Nazis had made many underground facilities, including the infamous Mittelwerk facility at Nordhausen, where the V-2 rockets were constructed in miles of tunnels dug underneath the Harz Mountains. And a decision was made after World War II to do the same thing here. And some of the earlier installations that were begun in the late 40s and the early 50s were at Kirtland Air Force Base in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Site R at Fort Ritchie and just along the Maryland-Pennsylvania border, Mount Weather in Northern Virginia, and the Greenbrier, the infamous the now not so secret congressional underground bunker beneath the Greenbrier Hotel in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia. All of those are examples of some of the first generation underground installations that were made in the late 40s and early to mid 50s.
Those were all basically, we're going to take our break now, but those were all constructed primarily with traditional techniques of digging, forming up, and so forth. We're going to talk about some incredible tunnel boring and underground manipulating devices as we continue with Richard Sauter, Ph.D. We're going to tell you how to get hold of his book, Underground Bases and Tunnels, a must-read for anyone concerned about what's happening. As we continue here tonight, I'm Jeff Rentz. This is Sightings on the Radio.
Welcome back to Sightings on the Radio. You can reach Jeff live at 1-800-745-6655.
And we're talking with Richard Sauter, Ph.D., the author of the book Underground Bases and Tunnels. Again, a must-read for anyone in this country who cares about what's going on above ground or underground. And there's an awful lot going on underground here. The original underground constructions you were discussing just before the break were certainly accomplished with traditional techniques of digging, removing earth, and shoring up with pier and so forth underneath, correct?
Well, they were... They used the drill and blast method for the earlier for the earlier generation of underground installations. I actually talked to one of the old miners and now an elderly man who helped build one of the original facilities at Kirtland Air Force Base, the so-called Manzano Underground Base, which was originally a subterranean nuclear weapons assembly plant. And also was used in later years as a back engineering facility. They would take equipment underground there that the military industrial complex wanted to back engineer. You may speculate as to whether that may have included UFOs. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it certainly would have included things like missiles that had been obtained from the Soviet bloc, jet engines, tank mechanisms and parts and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But he told me that he was part of a crew of miners who made the tunnels and the different chambers and work areas there. And every time they finished a tunnel or a chamber or a workroom, some of which are quite large, by the way, that they would be pulled out and sent to a different part of the complex to resume working, such that when the entire underground facility was finished, and it's a two-part facility, I now have the floor plan for that facility, that no one miner or crew of miners had the floor plan or layout in their mind. Now, that is the most literal kind of compartmentalization. That's physical compartmentalization. Even the men who built the facility, who actually did the tunneling and the mining, didn't know what it looked like when they were finished, because their work was so closely monitored and supervised. That's hard to understand, but that's the way the system works. Now, today there's a very powerful and large and sophisticated machinery for excavating underground. I have pictures of some of these machines in my book, and essentially, the modern tunnel boring machine can be 20, 30, 40, 50 feet or more in diameter. They can be huge. And they grind and chew their way through the solid rock deep underground, something like a huge diesel or electrical-powered earthworm. And they trail equipment behind them, conveyors and motors and things like that. They can extend up to 200 or 300 feet or more behind them. And then there can be either dump trucks or front-end loaders or narrow-gauge rail cars that are run in behind the boring machine to carry away the muck that it grinds away from the rock as it chews its way and makes a tunnel deep underground.
These pictures, yeah, these pictures in your book are just remarkable. You don't see them in Time magazine. These are some amazing machines, folks. And as Richard just said, some 30, 40, maybe even 50 feet in diameter.
Or more.
Huge, huge.
And the thing to understand is many tunnels are made for perfectly ordinary reasons all the time, for aqueducts, for subways, for railroad tunnels, for sewage outfalls. For highway tunnels, for all kinds of reasons. For example, as we speak, deep beneath New York City, about 800 feet down, New York City Water Works is boring new aqueducts, new water tunnels to deliver water to New York City from upstate New York, because the other tunnels that were made around the turn of the century are badly in need of maintenance, and of course you can't let New York City go dry and people not have their drinking water and so forth. So they've had to drill these other tunnels, and they'll put them into use when they're finished, and while they're being used, they'll go in and maintain the earlier century-old tunnels, and then they'll have two tunnels, and it'll be twice as good. So many tunnels are made for perfectly ordinary reasons, for public works programs. But in addition, we know that there are secret tunnels. I'll give you an example of what I mean. I no longer live in the Southwest. I lived there for several years in the late 80s and the first part of this decade. I live now on the East Coast, and shortly after moving here, I happened to meet a man completely by chance who used to work for a large corporation that had a contract to maintain computer systems for the federal government. A part of his job entailed going to Camp David to maintain the computer systems that the office of the president has there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I knew there was a bunker at Camp David, so I asked him about that. I said, what about the bunker? Have you ever been in there? He said, oh, yes. I said, well, what can you tell me about it? He said, oh, well, there are miles of tunnels, hundreds of feet underground beneath Camp David, and they extend from Maryland up into Pennsylvania, and so I asked him, are they extensive? He said, oh, yes, so extensive that he believes no one person has the complete layout of the complex in his or her mind. And there are guards stationed periodically, blast doors, there are work areas, storage areas, administrative areas, communications areas, computing areas. It's quite elaborate and sophisticated, and it sprawls, as he says, for miles, hundreds of feet underground. Those are the kinds of things that we have in this country. And as you drive around the rural countryside in Maryland and in southern Pennsylvania, you don't suspect all of this is beneath you, but indeed it is.
The transit system for access to these various areas via the tunnels would be what?
That's a matter of speculation. You hear a lot of wild tales on shock TV, and you read strange things on the Internet, and some people are saying, well, there's a coast-to-coast high-speed magnetic levitation tube shuttle that's mm-hmm. being very secretly operated by the military. I have yet to see any proof of that. I've heard plenty of stories. What I think is more likely is that there are probably more modest regional tunnel systems of the kind that I just described. There's a member of my family who had an elderly friend who mentioned that her husband, earlier in his career, used to had helped make and maintain some of the tunnels in the southern Pennsylvania, northern Maryland area. Are you still there, Jeff?
Right here.
Okay, there was a click on the phone.
No, I'm here.
And that he said that the big shots from Washington, D.C. would come up and drive through those tunnels in their limousines. Now, I don't know if the tunnels extend all the way down to Washington, D.C., but they could. It's uh-huh. only about a 45-mile drive. That's
makes
well within
sense.
The state of the art.
Sure, sure.
Well within the state of the art. In fact, the technology to make tunnels of that length existed at the turn of the century. I'm talking about 100 years ago.
That's just amazing. When you think about what we have done technologically, and I look back at your book and see the patents granted in the early 70s for some of these remarkable tunnel boring machines, which apparently were able to use nuclear power in some fashion, and this is 25 years ago. What they might have now is just really what we used to call science fiction.
Well, and I have to interject a caveat here with respect to the patents for the nuclear-powered tunneling machines, the so-called nuclear subterranes. The patents are real. There are three of them. They were granted by the United States Patent Office to United States agencies. I don't know if the machines have been built or not. I don't have any proof of that, but the patents are real.
Well, indeed. All right, my guest, Richard Sauter, your calls will be invited shortly. We're talking about underground facilities tonight, tunnels, bases, all sorts of interesting things. And as you heard earlier, England apparently has its own underground tunnel system, big enough to drive in and maybe rail transit as well. Be right back with Richard Sauter in just a couple minutes.
You're listening to Sightings on the Radio. Your calls are welcome at 1-800-745-6655.
For years, people have been talking about underground noises. We have, as you well know, persistent reports of a hum being heard in various parts all over the U.S. In fact, could some of these noises possibly be coming from underground activity such as construction and tunnel boring, Richard?
Yeah, I think so. And my answer will have two parts. The sound could be from mechanical machinery, I think, in some cases. And that would depend on there being vents to the surface or shafts to the surface where the sound could come out. And certainly you would have to have shafts periodically for air, which could be very artfully camouflaged and concealed, by the way, and which I would expect indeed are. I would note that one of the most famous humming sounds was heard in recent years in the Taos area in northern New Mexico. And in my book, I specifically mention the Taos area as one of the places where the Defense Nuclear Agency back in the mid-1970s was discussing placing a military facility as deeply buried as 5,000 feet underground. That is almost a vertical mile straight down.
It's amazing.
Yes. So I think it's possible they may have put something in the Taos area, and maybe people were hearing machinery either constructing such a facility or machinery being used in the operation of such a facility. Now, the second part of the answer is that ELF electromagnetic transmissions, ELF standing for extremely low frequency, can be psychoactive. They can interact with the human mind and perceptions. And those transmissions are used by the Navy and some other military agencies. They happen to be very useful for transmitting from underground installations because they will go right through the solid rock. And so I think it's also possible that people hearing these humming sounds may be, in fact, detecting ELF transmissions that are activating their auditory cortex. These ELF transmissions, in some cases, in my opinion, possibly could be emanating from underground installations.
That's a very reasonable and pragmatic guess. We are living in a veritable soup bowl of EMF, ELF, and VLF now all over the place. It's amazing what the world is producing. What about the actual progress underground? How fast can these machines dig a tunnel per day?
Well, you know, from the literature I've read, with the so-called conventional tunnel boring machines, which are usually electrical powered or diesel powered, usually electrical powered because you don't have a problem with fumes in the tunnel. They can vary. They can go as high as a few hundred feet per day in good rock, and anywhere from 10 to 15 miles per year in good rock, with one machine operated by one crew of men. Now, clearly, if you had a fleet, I don't know what you would call a bunch of tunnel boring machines. I would say it would be a fleet. Suppose you had a fleet of machines working in series, each doing its own 10 or 15-mile segment of a planned longer tunnel complex. Clearly, if you had each machine doing 10 or 15 miles over a 10-year period, if you had 10 machines, you could make hundreds of miles of tunnels, maybe even 1,000 or more with comparative ease. It's well within the state of the art to do that. You need not posit alien technology to make large, deep underground tunnels. The machinery, the trained personnel, the money, the requisite infrastructure of secrecy all exist right here on Earth, right here in the United States to do that.
Apparently, money is no object at all either. Let's go to the phones and take a call from Chuck, who is up in Fort Collins, listening on KCOL. Hi, Chuck. Welcome to the program. Your question for Richard Sauter, please.
Yeah, I was just, I think I know the answer to this, but the thing is, I'd like to just ask you a question and see what your explanation of it would be. They're down there, like Iron Mountain is one of them and all that, I know this. They're down there in the ground. Missiles start hitting this country, especially the East Coast and the West Coast out there. What happens when these ground plates start to shift?
Oh, well, I guess there'll be a whole lot of shaking going on, won't there?
I wonder if they thought of that.
Well, yes, and actually it turns out they have. In an earthquake or in any other kind of movement of the earth, whether it's naturally created or unnaturally created, in most cases, you're actually safer in a well-designed underground facility than you are on the top. And here's why. When seismic waves move, they move through the earth, and it'll make the earth move in a wave-like fashion. If you're on the surface of the earth, the earth can actually ripple, much like waves of water on the ocean. And that can cause great damage and injury to people that are on the surface. If you're underground, remember, seismic waves travel through rock and through soil. When they come to an empty space, the seismic wave rapidly attenuates because there's nothing to conduct it. An underground installation is empty space. So it will, of course, not conduct the seismic wave. It will move up and down within the rock as the rock moves. So in many cases, you would actually have less damage, less shaking, and less injury in a well-designed underground installation than you would on the surface.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
No, thanks for calling, Chuck. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. You know, a lot of people have looked into buying surplus underground facilities. That may sound silly, but there are a lot of old missile silos that have gone on the market cheap and been bought up. Tell us about that, Richard.
Yeah, there are some of them here and there around the country, the old Nike missile silos, Atlas missile silos, the earlier generation of liquid-fueled ICBMs back in the 50s and early 60s. Many of those silos have been abandoned. I believe there were some in New York and Texas and California, various places around the country. I don't actually know all of those locations. But yes, the government in recent years has put some of that real estate on the private market, and comparatively cheaply, if you have a few tens of thousands burning a hole in your pocket, you can pick up your nice little underground bunker.
It's amazing. I know someone who's looking into purchasing one in New Mexico, and apparently the surrounding countryside is sand, rock, and rattlesnakes.
Yes, there are a lot of rattlesnakes in the Southwest, and they're very poisonous. And
they got them out here on the West Coast, too, but they have two legs. there was a story that I had on the website. It's very interesting. I know you're up on this, but for our listeners, I wanted to mention it. Ancient tunnels under Los Angeles on the West Coast. It came out of UFO Roundup. You probably saw that, Joseph Traynor, the editor. Fascinating that an area in L.A. Is rumored to have underground tunnels. And this goes back to a very interesting man. And tell us about it if you want.
Well, I don't know if it's true or not. I've read these stories. I've read those stories, and I've read similar stories with respect to Salt Lake City. There is supposed to be a deep system of tunnels under Salt Lake City and other areas of Utah. And you read these various stories from time to time. about different cities. I don't know if they're true or not. They make they're interesting stories to read.
Oh, they're fascinating, yeah.
But what is true is that beneath any large city today, virtually anywhere in the world, there is a labyrinth of tunnels for all kinds of reasons, for electrical cables, for sewers, for water mains, for subways, for many different reasons to convey heat, fuel lines, on and on, telephone lines. There are all kinds of tunnels, and that's as true of New York City, Chicago, L.A., Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, Paris, London, all large cities in the world.
It's a hidden world under these cities. You're quite right. I've seen a documentary on that once, and it was just amazing what's under there. Be right back with Richard Sauder. That's spelled S-A-U-D-E-R, and we'll talk more with him in about 3 minutes.
Sightings on the radio. Call now. Toll free at 1-800-745-6655.
Just for fun, let me read just a little bit of this to our listeners who haven't been able to get to the Internet to see this, the L.A. Underground Tunnel story. In 1933, self-styled inventor and mining engineer G. Warren Shufeldt came to Los Angeles hoping to interest backers in what he called his radio X-ray device, kind of an early-day subterranean sonar. Visiting Brentwood, then a new post-World War I subdivision, Shufeldt tested his invention and supposedly discovered underground tunnels running south to Santa Monica and the ocean. He also discovered tunnels deep beneath the area of present-day Dodger Stadium, the Central Library, and Fort Moore Hill, now the site of the L.A. Unified School District headquarters. To understand his find, Shufeldt said he took his secret to Arizona, to a famous Hopi Indian leader known as Chief Greenleaf. The Hopi tale, the chief told him, begins about 3,000 years B.C. with a highly advanced race of people known as the Lizard People. According to legend, after a fire or meteor nearly destroyed their culture, the mysterious race built three underground cities along the Pacific coast. And it goes on and on. One of the cities underneath L.A., another under Mount Shasta, and nobody knows where the third was. But again, these kinds of things, Richard, as you said, are in our folklore and our mythology, and it's always fascinating to come across them, though.
Yeah, my guess is that there have been previous technological civilizations on the Earth in remote antiquity, and that they maybe weren't really lizard people, so to speak, but people who may have, for whatever reason, be remembered in myth as being lizard people. Maybe because of their culture, some aspect of their culture, or because of some aspect of their technology, like a predilection for tunneling, maybe, as some lizards like to go into tunnels or take cover beneath rocks and so forth.
Right.
But the evidence for previous high civilization is all over, if you want to look at it. A recent edition of Fate magazine showed a huge pyramids in China, and they were very good color photos, very clear close-up color photos of these pyramids taken by a German researcher and author who snuck in there. It's not easy for a Westerner to get into the countryside, remote countryside in China, but he did and photographed these pyramids there. Some of them are larger than the pyramids in Egypt, and yet you hear nothing about these in the mass media, or if you go away to the university and take a world history course or an archaeology course, these things are not mentioned at all.
Similar construction, Richard?
They don't look like Egyptian pyramids. They resemble more closely the Mesoamerican pyramids, and that they are flat-topped, but they are massive. Massive pyramids, clearly many thousands of years old, and they are not of Chinese manufacture. The Chinese themselves do not know who made them. And then you have the stone ruins that have recently been discovered underwater off the coast of Japan, very large megalithic ruins, huge blocks of stone, and very nicely cut, by the way, and preserved. And the temple in Baalbek, Lebanon, the ruins along the shores of Lake Titicaca on the borders of Peru and Bolivia, and on and on. The evidence is all over the earth for a previous high civilization, at least one of them.
At least one, yeah.
Many thousands of years ago, and the difference between civilizations in remote antiquity and today is that in the past, the engineers built with stone on a grand scale that has not been equaled since.
Yeah, has not. Absolutely right. I wonder why more people don't seem to be overly intrigued with this. The evidence is all over the place, as you've said. One wonders if it challenges our belief structure too much, that belief structure which has been inculcated into us, certainly, for a couple of thousand years. We are so myopic as a race on this planet. I've had Richard Cremo on the program several times. You know,
yes.
His work.
Yes.
Fascinating work, The Hidden History of the Human Race. Archaeologically, what has been found and hidden away is phenomenal. And these
yes.
things are found in geologic formations that are millions of years old. They're clearly intelligently designed artifacts of any number of shapes and configurations.
Yes. Our history is far different than we have been told. There's no question about that. As to why we ignore it, I don't know. The evidence is literally staring us in the face. It's there for anyone to see if they will. It's not
well,
so
we,
much.
We almost trip over it, Richard.
No,
it's right.
Exactly.
It's embarrassing.
It's not really a hidden history. It is an ignored history, and there's a difference between the two. The evidence is there for one and all to see, including academic historians and archaeologists, for students at the university, for people listening to the radio, and I'm assuming you have a fairly good-sized audience.
Wonderful
to this
audience.
Conversation, yes.
Very intelligent
The evidence
people.
Is there for us to do with it what we will. So far, as a race, by and large, we've decided we'll shut our eyes, we'll turn our head, we'll ignore it, and pretend we don't know what we really know. And why we do this is beyond me.
Any young geologist or archaeologist who wants to see a career snuffed, all they have to do is start shaking the bastions of of the status quo with some discoveries, and it's happened many times. All of a sudden, the grant money's gone. The tenure, for some reason, is somehow disrupted, on and on and on. It's amazing. We are locked into this grid of myopia. Be right back with Richard Sauter here. I'm Jeff Rentz, the program Sightings on the Radio. Do visit the website. Lots of new information up just today. Tremendous amount of material for you to consider and to make your own decisions. Be right back after this.
You're listening to Sightings on the Radio. Here's Jeff.
Okay, Richard, one quote always keeps recurring to me. Nearly everyone stumbles over the truth sooner or later. Unfortunately, most of them pick themselves up and continue right on as if nothing happened. And that pretty much sort of tells the tale.
Yes, yes. You know, at the outset of the program, we started talking about underground bases, and I want to come back around to that at the close of this segment and assure people that indeed there are secret underground facilities built and operated by the United States military right here in the United States and by other agencies, some of them governmental and some of them in the corporate sector. These things can be very deep in some cases, hundreds of feet underground, even thousands of feet underground. They can sustain large numbers of people, hundreds or even a couple thousand people. You can literally have the equivalent of a small town deep underground, hundreds or thousands of feet underground. And indeed, these places do exist.
We're going to get back to that in more detail in our next hour as well. A phone number for ordering the book, Richard?
Sure. You can order Underground Bases and Tunnels, What is the Government Trying to Hide? From 1-800-905-8367. That's 1-800-905-8367.
And the price?
Well, you know, I haven't actually ordered it myself. I believe it's $15.95 plus shipping and handling.
Yeah, it's, again, I'm not kidding. This is, as is Nick Redfern's book, A Covert Agenda. This is a must-read, a must-acquisition for your library to give you the broad-based knowledge that you need to really make decisions in this very fast-paced time we live in. The idea of the government working underground, FEMA, command and control centers, private companies building underground facilities. Very intriguing. I'd like to talk a little bit more about that. We know, by the way, Bill Gates just finished his home up in the Pacific Northwest, and I understand that much of it is underground.
Yeah, well, maybe Bill knows something the rest of us don't.
I didn't want to say that, but you did.
Well, he's a wealthy man. I'm sure he knows quite a lot of things, and he probably pays people to find things out for him.
There are
advantages to going underground. It need not be that much more expensive, actually, to build underground than on the surface. You can save on your heating bill by going underground. In fact, one of the problems for underground installations is getting rid of heat, because machinery generates heat, even the human body generates heat, and when you're in an enclosed space, that heat builds up, and once you heat up the surrounding rock to a certain point, then you have to get rid of the excess heat that's being generated.
And it's always interesting for me to remember the fact that if you get, I think it's only a foot underneath the topsoil, the temperature is utterly stable. It varies little from season to season. It doesn't take much earth at all to really trap heat and maintain a relatively constant temperature.
Yeah, assuming you're in a temperate region.
Assuming,
of course, if you're
yes.
in an Arctic or Antarctic environment, you'd have to go fair bit deeper than that. But yes, the rock and the soil are wonderful insulators.
And there are more and more people looking into building underground or earth-sheltered homes all the time, and some pretty neat construction techniques are out there. That's hour number one. Let me remind you again, the phone number for Richard Sauder's book, Underground Bases and Tunnel, What is the Government Trying to Hide, is 800-905-8367. And we shall continue after our news break here with another hour. Your phone calls are more than welcome tonight. This is a very intriguing subject. Very happy to have the chance to talk to Richard about it again. 1-800-745-6655, our number, as is always the case, and we shall continue right after the news.